We conclude this evening our study on types of psalms, and we finish with one of the collection known as wisdom psalms. It's all about what happens in your head and how God wants to control your mind in a positive way, to focus your mind on good things and on pure things, and to move us away from things that might destroy us or eat our heart out. Psalm 37, it's a long psalm. I'm not going to actually sort of preach on all of it, but we will read all of it. There are Bibles on the back there if you want to grab a Bible. Please feel free to grab one. Don't be embarrassed about getting up and wandering around grabbing a Bible. That's what we do in Penrith. So Psalm 37. Do not fret because of evil men or be envious of those who do wrong. For, like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteousness shine like the dawn, the justice of your cause like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when men succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret, it leads only to evil. For evil men will be cut off, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy great peace. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow, and bring down the poor and needy, and slay those whose ways are upright. But their swords will pierce their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. Better the little that the righteous have than the wealth of many wicked. For the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The days of the blameless are known to the Lord, and their inheritance will endure forever. In times of disaster they will not wither. In days of famine they will enjoy plenty, but the wicked will perish. The Lord's enemies will be like the beauty of the fields. They will vanish like smoke. The wicked borrow and do not repay, but the righteous give generously. Those the Lord blesses will inherit the land, but those he curses will be cut off. If the Lord delights in a man's way, he makes his steps firm. Though he stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I was young, and now I'm old. Tell me about it. Yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. They are always generous. And then freely, their children will be blessed. Turn from evil and do good. Then you will dwell in the land forever. For the Lord loves the just and will not forsake his faithful ones. They will be protected forever, but the offspring of the wicked will be cut off. The righteous will inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous man utters wisdom, and his tongue speaks what is just. The law of his God is in his heart. His feet do not slip. The wicked lie in wait for the righteous, seeking their very lives, but the Lord will not leave them in their power or let them be condemned when brought to trial. Wait for the Lord and keep his way. He will exhort you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you will see it. I've seen a wicked and a ruthless man flourishing like a green tree in its native soil. But he soon passed away and was no more. Though I looked for him, he could not be found. Are you thinking of the Arab Spring here? Are you thinking of Saddam Hussein? And I was reading this just this week, reading it through again, thinking, whoa, how many dictators have I seen bite the dust in my lifetime? And there's still one or two more out there holding on, thinking that they can fool God. They can't. Consider the blameless. Observe the upright. There is a future for the man of peace, but all sinners will be destroyed. The future of the wicked will be cut off. The salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. Whoa, that's a psalm and a half. Is that not one of the greatest psalms in the Bible? Come on, that is just awesome. If all I do this week is imprint that in your mind for a week, I will be a happy man because I will have left God's word in your heart where it should be. Do you know, this psalm was one of Jesus' favorite psalms. Jesus loved this psalm. I don't know how many times he heard it, but he loved it. And I know he loved it because some of it appears in the Sermon on the Mount. Some of it appears in the Sermon on the Mount. The meek will inherit the earth, said Jesus. And what does verse 11 say? The meek will inherit the land, inherit the earth. Same word in Hebrew. Same word. The meek will inherit the earth. Jesus quoted Psalm 37 in the Sermon on the Mount. Word for word he quoted it. Just the verse from it, but he quoted it. So I know he loved it. So, hey guys, doesn't this sound good? Here we are, bank holiday evening in farthest of the Isles, you know, part of the world that in those days was considered the land of the barbarians, the pagan Welsh. Here we are, reading the same psalm that Jesus loved. Isn't that cool? Oh, I think it's fantastic. So we're sitting with Jesus as we go through this one. We're closer, in a sense, to the book of Proverbs than the book of Psalms, though. Though it is a psalm, it's in a book of Psalms, it's close to the book of Proverbs because of its special structure. This psalm in the Hebrew original was written in the form that we call an acrostic. That is, every section begins with a new letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Like ABC, you know, there's some songs that start ABC, you know, you go through them all till you get to Z and you're in trouble, or X, you're in trouble. But the Hebrews had a form of wisdom, poetry. So in the first couple of verses, first four verses begin with the letter A, and the next two, well, it begins with the letter Aleph, but you know, it begins with the letter A, the next four verses begin with the letter B, the letter C, the letter D. It was a form of wisdom, poetry, and which makes it really difficult to preach from, actually, because kind of every four verses it breaks and starts off on sometimes quite a different idea. So these things are tortuous to preach your way through, very difficult, because of the original Hebrew poetic structure. However, in all this, I am blessed because. Although every couple of verses, you know, it changes. It does change every couple of verses. Changes letter, changes theme slightly. I've got on my shelf a wonderful Bible commentary by a fantastic Anglican Bible commentator called Derek Kidner, and he makes the most beautiful job of this psalm, so much that I've lifted his structure almost word for word. Just not the sermon, but the structure I've just taken straight out of Derek Kidner's book. As you come on to it, he does a wonderful job. So that's what I'm doing. So I'm going to kind of start at verse 7. And verse 7 says, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him." Could we have my PowerPoint on the screen now, please, Roshni? That would be good. And hopefully, here we are. So we've got Matthew 5 and Psalm 37. We've seen that. So being still before the Lord, Psalm 37. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when men succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Literally, don't get heated. Chill out before the Lord. That's a very modern Peter Cousins translation. Chill out before the Lord. But you've got the idea. That's basically what it means. What happens when you get heated? You lose concentration and you lose sleep, don't you? If you're heated, your mind's heated, you lose those things. Do you lose the peace of God? The peace of God, you can't settle on anything. Yeah. So it says, don't do that. Be still before the God. Before God, what the psalm is saying, basically the whole psalm is saying, create a place of stillness in God's presence where you can be still before God, where you just rest from... I know some of you lead manic lives, just rushing from one thing to another. That's fine. That's okay. That's good. That's good. I'm sometimes accused of that myself. But it's good. And some of us like to be busy. But you have to create in the space of that day a place of stillness before God. And if you don't do that, the psalm says you're going to get heated. You're going to overheat. You've got to chill in God's presence at some point in your day, in your life. A time to be together with God. And that can be any time of day, whichever time is best for you. Some people find early morning is great. Some people find late at night is great. Some people find midday is great. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter where, as long as you find a moment to chill. If you're busy, some of you are busy at work, finding a place at work to chill, even if it's for 5-10 minutes in the middle of your day, is so important, just to pray about things. It could be the commute into work. It, for some of you, might be time to chill with God. Whatever it is, be still before God. He's not asking you to forget your problems. He's not asking you to forget your tensions. He's not asking you to forget your contradictions and your worries. He's asking you to share them with God in that moment of stillness. To honestly bring those worries and those fears, whatever's annoying you, to God. Bring them before him in that moment of stillness. Don't pretend they're not there. God knows they're in your heart. Tell him about it. Unburden yourself to God at some point every day in a moment of stillness. Create stillness all around you. Yeah. That's what he's asking you to do. And he asks you to do three things. First is this. Look ahead. Look ahead. Verse 2. The wicked are like the grass, they'll soon wither. Like grass plants, they'll soon die away. Verse 10. A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. A few years from now, he says, things will be different. You're getting uptight and heated now. In a few years' time, things are going to be different. You know that. Let's face it, we all know that. A few years from now, the big issues of today will be history. And we've got to recognize that things are going to roll on. However bad, however difficult things might seem at the moment, they won't be like that in 2 years' time. We'll be facing different circumstances in 2 years' time. So accept the fact that things evolve. And accept the fact that those who have hurt you or hurt those you love or hurt those you care for, in a day's time will be 24 hours nearer to God's judgment than they are today. Remember that. The day of judgment is rolling on. All dictators grow old and die, and many of them die prematurely for their crimes. Many of them. How many dictators have we? I was just thinking about the number of dictators you thought, these guys will never fall. But they fell, you know, they fell. Like Ceausescu and Idi Amin and Saddam Hussein. Mubarak, Gaddafi looks like he's on his last legs. Arab Spring reaching Syria. I'm just trying to think of it. I've forgotten more. I've filled one hand already without actually preparing any of this. Dictators that have fallen. We've seen dictators fall, yeah? And even those who haven't fallen are nearer God's judgment. It's like a tick-tock of judgment arriving on the wicked. Tick-tock, you know? Like these people who committed crimes 20 years ago and thought they got away with it, and now with DNA analysis, they can never be sure. Can you imagine what those guys are like walking around? Never been sure when the cold case team are going to open up their case and extract DNA from the crime scene 20, 30 years ago. And if their DNA or someone close to their DNA, if their brother gets a drunk driving charge or something, suddenly their DNA flags up on the suspicion on the system, and suddenly the police are knocking on the door 7 o'clock one morning to arrest them. It's like a TikTok. Can you imagine what these guys are living with? is today the day judgment knocks on my door? Yeah? Well, what the psalmist says, if you and God are at odds with each other, the tick-tock of judgment is getting closer. Every day you live, you are that much closer to the day of judgment. When that day when God will put all wrongs right, and we will really see who's on God's side and who wasn't. In God's time, they'll come to an end. Not in our time necessarily, but in God's time, they will. So look ahead. Put it in perspective, in other words. Put it in the perspective of God's eternal judgment, and you'll see how things are different. And my second point actually is not on here. About 5 o'clock, half past five this afternoon, I realised that I'd missed a point out. The second point is to look up in verses 3-7. Look up, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. These are all active words. Trust, do good, delight, commit your way, be still. There's a passive element to enjoy safe pasture. That's actually active, isn't it? You will be granted the desires of your heart. Your righteousness will shine. Your true colours will shine through. These things will happen to you. These things will happen to you. Commit your way to the Lord. And as you look up, as you look to God, you'll discover, as you pray, as you look to God, the things you pray for start to happen. Things you pray for start to happen. One of our experiences as a church of late is that when we kind of target prayers in certain areas or certain groups of people, after a year or two of that, suddenly you begin to see things flourish in that area. It takes time. But as you look to God, what you desire, the longing of your heart, will begin to happen. God will give you the desire of your heart in his own time. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Of course, the key word is patiently. Patiently. That's a difficult word for me. Patiently. I can wait for the Lord, that's okay. Waiting patiently is much harder. Getting on with what I've got to do day to day without worrying about what's not happened yet is one of my big issues, one of God's big issues with me. And it might be with you as well. Wait patiently, God says. Peter, be patient. And I say, no, I want it now. I can't settle until it happens. Peter, be patient. Get on with what you've got to do now and leave what can't be done now for me. Trust in the Lord and do good. Delight yourself in the Lord. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him who will do this. Are you prepared tonight to trust your way to the Lord? Are you prepared to do that? Prepared to trust him with your life and your future. So we're supposed to look ahead. We look up and we look away. We look away from things that really there's no point worrying about or spending too much time on. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. In verses 8 to 9, verse 10 to 11. Little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land or inherit the earth and enjoy great peace. Don't fret. Stop getting angry. If there's something that angers you, it might be on the news. Might be something that's happened to you. And you find yourself peeling the potatoes and thinking about it and getting angry again. Does that happen to you? Or you're in the shower in the morning when you should be fresh and getting ready for the day. And instead of being thanking God for this lovely, clean, warm water that's pouring down on you and the soap that you've bought and you kind of come out the shower smelling good and clean and fresh, you've actually got your mind full of something that's really annoying you or has annoyed you and you're getting angry about it. Does that happen to you? It happens to me. Okay. Now let me ask you, is that the first time you got angry about it? And you probably say, no, Pete, it wasn't the first time. I've been angry about it before. So let me ask you, did it help getting angry about it the first time? And the answer is no, it didn't. So why do you think it will help getting angry about it now? If it's not worked before, why are you doing it again? If it fails to improve the situation the first time, the second time, the third time, why are you doing it for the fourth? There's some smiles. I know I'm not the only one here who's doing this. Okay? Thank Lord I'm not the only one. I begin to think I'm a bit weird, but I'm not. Obviously, I'm in good company. How many times have you got angry about a neighbour in dispute, the noise, the hedge, the parking? How many times have you got angry with your boss or colleague at work? People at school, teacher at school, classmates at school, the uninsured driver who put a dent in your car, the thief who stole from you. They're all these kind of people, you know? People who slandered you, people who criticized you. And yet you fret, you get angry. Not once, but twice, three times, four times, five times, six times. And it never helps. The cognitive behavior therapists have a technique which is very useful. They say to, in your imagination, create a box that's in some inaccessible place, somewhere where nobody can get to it to open. And what they say is, whenever you get one of these thoughts in your mind, move it straight into that box where nobody, not even you, can open it. And get into the mental practice of taking those thoughts straight away as they begin to happen, don't dwell on them, straight in your box. You can have fun inventing places to put that box. It can be anywhere where nobody can get at it, not even you. Have fun, be creative, but have that box. And when those thoughts arrive, drop them in the box and get on with thinking about something else, because that's what the psalmist is saying. It's true that the wicked appear to do well. Do not fret because of evil men, it says, or envy. Do not be envious. Don't be jealous of those who do wrong. Did you know that there is one man in the world who is richer than the 10 poorest nations put together? Did you know that? Actually, there are 6 men on this planet who are richer than each of them richer than the 10 poorest nations put together. And look at these guys. Now, I'm not saying they're wicked. I don't know anything about them. But you could look at them and say, why should this one man control everything? Well, these 10 nations don't have the revenue and the income and the resources that this one person has. You can get angry about that. You can fret about it. You can fret about global warming and environmental things. And yeah, sure. But there are moments you've got to look away from that and look to God and say, I'm going to do what I can, but I'm not going to spend my time fretting. So we look ahead, we look up to God, and we look away. And then the next thing we're told is this. We are to be up, God upholds us even when we stumble, even when these things really trip us up, and we have a bad day, a bad week, and these things trip us up, God upholds us. Now, at this point, Derek Kidner goes off on one, and it's brilliant. He links it with 2 Corinthians 4, 7-12. It's totally sort of out of the blue. And where Paul talks about Christians, he says, we have this treasure in jars of clay, to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. And what Derek Kidner does, he overlays Paul's comments onto this psalm. And it works out absolutely beautifully. So, persecuted but not forsaken. This is the life of the righteous in the New Testament and in the Old Testament. Verse 12. of Psalm 37. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them, or grind their teeth. Gnash always reminds me of gnashed, then it's the menace dogs. It's not a helpful word to me. Grind their teeth at them. The reversals which God sees coming. God knows that we are going to be under some kind of threat. Persecuted but not forsaken. Church history is full of reversals. A lot of own goals, but a lot of persecutions as well. But God says, ultimately, his people will survive. They're persecuted but not forsaken. As having nothing, yet possessing all things, says the Apostle Paul, as does this, I was young and now I'm old, yet I've never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. As the Apostle Paul himself says, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. So we are as having nothing, yet possessing all things. Christians are not the richest people on the planet. And we, certainly in this church, are not the richest people in our nation, let alone on the planet. Having nothing, yet we possess all things in God. The psalm reminds us that in God we have everything. Making many rich, says the Apostle Paul. Psalm 21, 22 says, the wicked borrow and do not repay. I write that in my book sometimes when I lend them out. It's quite effective. But the righteous give generously. Those the Lord blesses will inherit the land, but those he curses will be cut off. Verse 26, they are always generous and lend freely. Their children will be blessed. We bless others from whatever wealth we have. That's the sign of the righteous, says the psalmist. People thank God for the righteous of this earth. That's what the psalmist is saying. Making many rich. We are generous, sharing people. At least we should be. That's one of the signs of... They're not hoarders. They're not mean and tight-minded people. They're open and generous, giving people the best of their thoughts and their time and their wealth. Making many rich, says the Apostle Paul. The righteous give generously, says the psalmist. Fits beautifully, doesn't it? Cast down but not destroyed, says the Apostle Paul. Christians, you know, we're cast down but not destroyed. Psalm 37, 23 and 24. If the Lord delights in a man's way, he makes his steps firm. Though he stumble, he will not fall. For the Lord upholds him with his hand. Material calamity can trip us up. He's not talking here about moral failure. He's talking about material calamity. And sometimes we stumble. We take ill. We get tired. We make mistakes. Genuine mistakes. People do things that get in our way and spoil our plans, spoil our situation. And we stumble. We stumble sometimes through life. We have good times and bad times. I was listening to Tony Campolo preach 18 months ago, and he and his wife was there, lovely lady, and they're fantastic, but two very strong personalities, and they don't always agree, and they're a great couple. They just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and Tony said to her, well, there you are, he said, here are anniversary, milestone anniversary. She said, yes, 48 years of happy marriage. And he said, but we've been married 50. And she said, I know. Okay? You know, you go through bad times, you go through bad phases, you stumble, but you don't fall. The Lord holds you up. The Lord holds you up. We ask ourselves, what will life throw at me next? What's going to wait for me this week? I may be cast down. I can't guarantee we're all going to have great... I'd love to say, you know, you've been to church on Sunday evening, on a bank holiday evening. Because of this, God is going to bless you in the week. And I trust he will. But materially, you might get tripped up this week. Something might happen that completely throws you. It might happen. But what the psalmist is saying, listen, it might happen, but you won't fall. You won't fall. Because God's going to uphold you. You might have a really difficult week ahead of you. But God's going to uphold you through that week. Okay, God's going to uphold you through that week. You might have the whole world rocking and shaking under you. But God will uphold you. And remember that in the long term, you and Jesus are together and nothing will separate you from that. You are destined to live with Jesus for all eternity and nothing will change it. The wicked will come and go. Dictators will eventually fall. Judgment will eventually arrive for the entire world. But you are in Jesus. And in Jesus, you are God's special creature. And he loves you. And he's going to be with you.